Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Remember when it was just 5 points from a possible 21? Ha! Successive wins for the first time since December, then became three on the bounce with victory over Middlesbrough in midweek. Teams below are faltering. Now it's time for their blip, and next up it is Hull. Without a win in the league since New Year's Day and in free fall with striker Tom Eaves out until the end of the campaign. We're going to be looking back on 3-1-0 wins on the bounce. We'll be looking ahead to Hull, and we'll also be talking all things Kiko Kassir. Bit of big breaking news there. On this, the Leeds United fan show, me, Matt Beadle, joined by John McKenzie from All Stats, aren't we? Hello, John.
Hey, mate.
And James Wood, the fiery, the feisty, the new and improved James Wood with us in the studio too.
I'm not sure if that's a compliment, but good to see you too.
Lovely to have you in the studio, gents. And I've got to say, I've been feeling pretty good of late. No, we can't do it. Last time we did it, it was a jinx. We don't want to get carried away, all right? So none of that... Actually, go on. Go a bit on. No, we don't want any more. We're cutting it short. Paddy, producer, we don't want any more, OK? None of that. This is the best bit now.
So gloriously, like, 80s, isn't it?
Absolutely love every minute of it. It's that bit at the end when she really gets into it. She really, like, the little harmony with the sax. The trill. Is it a trill? Is that what they call it?
I have no idea.
I think it's in singing, it would be a trill. So you've got to love that. Brilliant, brilliant, fellas. And 3-1-0 wins on the bounce. We're going to get into all of that, but a bit of news first. Breaking news for Leeds United, and that is that goalkeeper Kiko Kassir has been banned for 8 matches and fined £60,000 after being found guilty of racially abusing Charlton Athletic forward Jonathan Lecco. West Brom forward, of course, was with Charlton at the time on loan there. He has now returned to his parent club due to injury. Now, we'll get into this because Kiko denied the charge, didn't he? It's been a hearing that has rumbled on and on and on. We've kind of spoken about it, touched upon it every time we've done a show and not really known what's been happening. Now, with regards to Everything around this situation, Leeds have since released a statement. I'll read that out and then I'll come to you guys for comment. They have said, Leeds United acknowledges that Kiko Kassia has been found guilty of breaching FA Rule E3 during our Skybet Championship game with Charlton in September. Kassia has been banned for 8 games following the verdict. We would like to make it clear that we do not tolerate any form of discrimination within our football club, and we are a leader in the fight against discrimination within our wider community. However, it is important to recognise that Kiko has always denied making any racist comment. The FA panel have based their decision on the balance of probability rather than proving Kiko to be guilty beyond reasonable doubt, which we have always believed is the more appropriate burden of proof. Right, OK, let's get into this, because Antonio Rudiger has spoken out, hasn't he, earlier in the week, and saying racism's won, it's all over, the powers that be aren't doing enough. And we've got another example here where racism has reared its ugly head, and whilst Kiko has been given a ban and the club have endorsed that ban, they're also saying, but. And that's a wider issue that will surely be picked on.
Yeah, I think it's a bit naughty of the club to come out the way that they have and be bullish about a charge of racism. To say something like this is based on the this is on the basis of probability, I think is naughty, because I think innocent until proven guilty is still on the basis of probability a lot of the time. If there was anyone else, I think, in any other profession who was accused of making racial comments, their case would be also based on balance of probabilities as well. So I think it's important to recognise that. I think the club are maybe trying to make it sound as though they're backtracking a little bit and saying, oh, well, you know, we just stuck by him, but that doesn't make us correspondingly racist. It's something that we've said all along, I think, on our channel, that you know, these sorts of things don't just happen as well. I think it's easy for fans to get carried up in the moment and be like, you know, the FA haters, the EFL haters, all sorts of conspiracy theories can come out. But it's one of those things where you hear it and you think, you know, there's a Spanish player who's been accused of using a racial term, and it's happened before, and we've seen those court cases rumble on, and just on the balance of probability, it just sounds like a classic case of Spanish player using a word that is maybe acceptable in their culture but isn't acceptable here. And these players come over here, they get a lot of money, they get a lot of attention from the fans, and they have a, broadly speaking, good life. And I think that, you know, that comes at a cost, and that cost is that they have to then respect the rules of the leagues and the countries that they come into.
How much, James, is this down to education for those players that come in? And we have to be careful here not to try and justify what's happened, because we categorically are not doing that from the outset. I just want to make that very, very clear. And John has used the word naughty there from the statement that Leeds have released. It's also quite dangerous, I think, in terms of saying, you know, the balance of probability and saying, however, by the way, this has happened. But I tell you what, we've spoken to Kiko, and yes, he might protest his innocence, but that cultural, not ignorance, but the fact that he was unaware that such a word might not be deemed acceptable here is surely part of the education process that these footballers have to learn.
Yeah, so I think, I think I said this last week, without knowing the exact specifics of what's been done, it's very difficult to have any kind of sort of informed comment on this issue. I do think when it comes to saying the club have behaved naughtily, in defence of the communications team, it is difficult either way. Because if the club had come out with a statement saying, we acknowledge there has been the FA has made a decision and said nothing else, that could also be interpreted as, we simply acknowledge the decision, but you can read into the context there. And given those kind of conspiracy theories that John mentions, they are circulating on Twitter, people are saying all of those things, I think it is important actually for the club to lay out the process by which this has been come to. Balance probability is exactly the right way of doing things. It is, I think Amitai Winehouse said on Twitter a couple of minutes ago, that's what you'd use for a civil proceeding in a court as opposed to a criminal proceeding. And it's also, let's forget, football is our entertainment, but it's Kiko Kassia's job. And if you're up on a disciplinary in any other line of work, it's exactly the same way of assessing what you've done that would be used by any other profession. So it shouldn't be a different rule for football. So I think making it clear how the decision has been arrived at is actually probably something the club should do, and is preferable to the alternative, which is just saying nothing, presuming the club isn't going to come out and say, yes, we do think he's a horrible racist, which would then cast the club in a bad light, because the immediate follow-up would be, well, why is he still a player then? Why haven't you sacked him? So I don't think there are really any good options. in terms of dealing with this scenario, and I think they've probably picked the best one. But I do understand completely the point and why you'd say that it was a bit naughty.
And that's the key point, right? He's going to be out now for 8 games. There are 11 games remaining. He'll be back for the game with Barnsley on 18th of April, if he's back, depending on what Meslier does in his absence. We're presuming it will be Meslier that steps in. John, from a fan's perspective now, having that goalkeeper who has been found guilty, regardless of how the fans perceive him, and he's a popular figure, you know, he's a very popular figure at the club. How do you feel as a fan now, knowing that you've had someone in your ranks at Leeds United that has been found guilty of racism?
I think it's interesting that you say as a fan, because I think if you ask most fans now, because he's had a bad run of form for 10 games, I don't think they could care less that he's being banned. And so therein lies the problem with fandom, right? That it becomes very hard to make ethical or moral decisions on the basis of what is essentially a football club. That's why, I mean, you mentioned, like, if the club had come out and said Kiko has been racist, therefore we're going to terminate his contract, I mean, is that not a legitimate course of action that the club could take? But they won't do that because Kiko is a valuable asset, and I think the same comes through, I guess, when you're a fan and you're assessing these scenarios. That all it took for, I think originally when these charges came out, everyone was incensed. All it took for people to change their mind on it was a 10 game bad run of form, and everything was reversed. So I just think it's a really, really tricky context and scenario to actually make any kind of decent judgment on. And no doubt, if Meslier came in and had a shocker for 5 games, people would probably change their minds again about the ban on Kessié. So, yeah, it's really hard to say. As a fan, I'm disappointed that Kiko has behaved in the way that he has. Too, a little bit by the way that the club have dealt with it. I just think we should have learned lessons from this. Has happened before, you know, for other clubs. We should have learned lessons. If you hear any of the Liverpool squad, for example, talking about Luis Suarez, there's a general consensus that the way they dealt with that was bad. And I think Leeds are obviously not going about things quite the same way. But I think there may be a sense in which they look back on this period and think, maybe we could have done things differently.
Yeah, and that was, what, 8-9 years ago as well, that incident involving Suarez and Evra. And sometimes you look at clubs and you just think, how are we still not quite getting this right? I'd imagine this debate will rumble on throughout the course of the week, various organisations getting involved too. There will be further discussion on this on Love Sport Breakfast, Weekend Breakfast tomorrow morning, so make sure you tune into that between 8 and 12pm. That is the news, that Leeds United goalkeeper Kiko Kessié has been banned for 8 matches and fined £60,000 after being found guilty of racially abusing Charlton Athletic forward Jonathan Lecco. This is the Leeds United Fan Show. We're going to look ahead to the game with Hull next and reflect on those 3 successive wins.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
Leeds United Fan Show. Me, Matt Beardall, with John McKenzie from All Stats, aren't we? James Wood in the studio with us too. Now, gents, we're around 14 minutes late, but it is time, John, for our opening stat.
Yeah, I've got another Josh Hobbs special. So the opening stat is Ben White only received the ball twice from the centre-backs playing in the defensive midfield role, which is obviously vastly different to what we'd expect a KP playing there, Calvin Phillips, and is a good way to point out why Leeds seem to struggle more than usual and were going long a lot more than normal. For comparison, in the last away game, Calvin Phillips received the ball 28 times from the centre-backs in the previous away games.
Okay, so we're basically saying that Ben White in that role... Not as
Ben White in that role, I think, is playing as more of a classic defensive midfielder. So he's there to break up the play. So we've incidentally had Ben White playing in those games, and we've not been conceding so many. But we've also not been creating quite. We don't have the same control because Phillips has got brilliant positional awareness. He's got a good passing range, and his movement's good as well. So I think between those two things, it's meant that incidentally, obviously, Ben White came on in the second half of the Reading game, and it changed a lot. Because we were already a goal up, and I think that meant that we could just have a midfielder who was just going to sit there, break up play, and that worked out fine for us. But in the Borough game, when we needed a more progressive and creative player in that spot, we had Ben White from the beginning, and it meant it was a little bit harder for us to create and transition the ball than we had been doing. So, yeah.
James, I felt in the first half of the season, all we did was really talk about Ben White. I feel like this is the first time... Really, we've spoken about Ben White in depth since the turn of the year, probably.
Yeah, it's probably fair. I just think that in in the role that he's being asked to do, he isn't as effective as Calvin. But then nobody would be. Calvin's one of the best defensive midfielders in, I'd say, in England, let alone in the Championship. And there's been a big article today in the Times saying he should be picked for the England squad. Mm-hmm. So compared to coming into Calvin, you're never going to have the same quality. And I think Bielsa said a couple of times that he doesn't have someone who can just drop in there, especially with Adam Forshaw being out. I think as well he's being asked to play an unfamiliar position, and the kind of things he does very well at centre-back, many of those skills aren't cross-applicable, where he's defending exceptionally well in front of the back four, but that range of offensive passing isn't there. Because when you look at him from an offensive point of view, playing as a centre-back, it tends to be making an interception and releasing a simple ball to either Phillips or Ayling from a sort of right half position. You put him further up the field and more central, and those kind of passing options aren't there. So I do think we need to be careful. Ben White, obviously, as a player, does have some limitations, and while he's coping admirably, he's probably a bit of a fish out of water in that position. And as soon as he can come back to centre back, it'll be better for him and for us.
I see him as a ball carrier more than a ball player, and I think that he loses his edge in that regard when he goes into the central midfield. Now we know that he's good under pressure as a defender, but that the difference between being good under pressure when you're under pressure from a single striker is completely different to being under pressure from a central midfielder, where you've got to evade the player and then move into space and you don't want to run into trouble again. So I totally agree with that. I think he's there because there's no one else to be there, and he's got probably the best skill set really of the senior players to do that. But it's really not ideal having him in central midfield.
It's also noticeable that when he's at centre-back and the play does tend to open up in front of him, he'll usually get to about 25, 30 yards from the box, but will then lose the ball because the passing ability isn't there. And it's, what is a good range of passing when you're a centre-back? Playing as a centre-back is not actually that good when you're put into a midfield role.
Mm. And you'll see that when Leeds play, the play tends to go through either down the right side from Ben White or go into Liam Cooper, and he'll be the player who has the better passing range, so he'll redistribute the ball. So,
But in general, actually, I can't think of too many centre-backs who've transitioned into being good defensive midfielders. I can think of quite a few defensive midfielders who've dropped further down the pitch and have been very effective, but not too many who've moved further forward.
Yeah.
So I think it's just probably a general problem for all players, and Ben White's coping as well as he can with it. Mm.
Well, let's look at the recent fixtures then, gents, because there was the 1-0 win against Bristol City a couple of Saturdays ago, then 1-0 against Reading, then 1-0 against Middlesbrough. The club are now eking it out, you'd feel. 5 points clear now, Fulham in third spot. The teams below Leeds in the Championship just seeming to falter last weekend. A very good weekend, of course, in terms of results. I think it was only Preston in that top seven, apart from yourselves and West Brom, who won last weekend. Of course, games in the week as well. We'll start with Reading first, James. Pablo Hernandez stepping up to the plate.
Yeah, so I was there with Jack, who was on last week. It was a bit of a scrappy game, and Reading did exactly what we thought they were going to try and do, which was sit in, defend well, prevent us from having chances, and try to hit us on the break. And they did the first part of that fairly well. Pablo's goal was not the prettiest, a couple of lucky ricochets and a fairly deft finish into the top corner at the end. But they couldn't really execute the second. They didn't really look like they had the tools to hurt us at any point during the game. I thought it just sort of was a statement of where we are and where they are as two respective sides. That, you know, the midfield for them, I know Ajaria pulled out, but Abise looked really good, and John Swift was good as well. But up front, Puskás, Mate, these aren't, you know, top players that are going to have you competing at the top end of the Championship. Mm. And it looked that way.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think it feels as though Leeds have turned a corner. That's what everyone says, right?
But I was waiting for that.
What does what do we mean when we say that? And what's actually going on the field has produced that? And I think simply I don't want to say players have stepped up, but I think there's a realization that, you know, we can't just mope about the fact that we're creating enough chances to win games. We've actually got to take some chances, and we've seen that in the games. It's been good to see Pablo, you know, forcing the issue, getting a goal. It's good to see Click forcing the issue, getting a goal. And I think the realization is, you know, Bamford's here to stay, and at some point it will turn around for him. He's not going to go for the rest of his career scoreless. And I think there's just a realization that, you know, this is they have no one to blame but themselves. It's up to them to get on with this, and it's been quite nice watching us kind of eke out 1-0 wins from games where we probably should be winning by more. So it's been quite nice to see, I think, because it feels as though after the Brentford performance, we've just become a little bit more businesslike, and we've just got on with it, made sure that we do just enough to win and win the games that we'd been saying this is the run that we need to start having before that Fulham game to guarantee that we're comfortable in second place.
It's also looking more like we're back to the team we were before Christmas, because particularly a couple of fixtures like the Brentford game, the Preston game, then I was saying it, you know, even when we're not playing well, even when the ball's not going in the net, it felt like there was sort of an inevitability about it, that we would play and the goal would eventually come, because whoever we're playing, they'll eventually make a mistake and we'll score. And it feels like we're coming back to that rather than what we've had in previous weeks, like Wigan, where the ball never does go in and then it's us making the mistake and conceding the goal. So it's been a gratifying, you know, return to that kind of style of game.
I also think it should put to bed this notion that Bielsa teams burn out at the end of the season, because I think what we've seen in this season is not a burnout. It has been some kind of psychological collapse. Now, we always caveat saying things like this by the fact that, you know, you can't quantify anything like that, but basically since that Cardiff game where we were 3-0 up and then we came out 3-3, there was clearly a mental fragility in the team that has taken them this long to turn around. And I think Phil Hay was saying on the Phil Hay show this week that he had noticed that the players, he just felt as though the players had were resigned a little bit to the fact that they just couldn't get anything right, everything was going badly for them. And amazingly, in the space of one game, everything's just turned around, and it just goes to show the importance of something like psychology on sports players. And hopefully that is all behind us now. But it's incredible just the impact that kind of thing can have.
I think the Brentford game was really important as well, because one of the things that happened in all of the games previous was that we'd play really well and then somebody would make a mistake and we'd concede. And it was like, well, no matter how well we play, we'll have a mistake and then we lose. I think actually it was better that we got a draw against Brentford and we had that mistake and then came back from it, and that we just sort of won 1-0, because it shows those mistakes can happen, but you can still dig yourself out of that hole. It's still perfectly possible, and you still can, and in the case of the Brentford game, should have gone on to win it. So it's that kind of mental change that's been evident over the last few games, along with the elimination of those errors which allow us to get the wins.
Well, it is just two. He is getting closer, isn't he, Patrick Bamford? Just two goals since Boxing Day for him. Ryan Shotton, I think, just managed to get a toe on that chance that looked like it was guaranteed to be a goal. It was Mateusz Klich, of course, with the winner right on the stroke of half-time. Four goals this season, three against Middlesbrough, which is quite an incredible stat. The other stat coming out of this one, his 83rd consecutive game for the club. Now, that is the joint 17th best in the club's history, which is, I mean, it just goes to show, doesn't it, the consistency that you have in a player like Klich. Actually, who's top of that list? Any idea?
The most consecutive.
Most consecutive appearances for Leeds United.
Oh, for Leeds?
For Leeds, yeah.
Oh, so it won't be the goalkeeper. Liam, no, he's been injured.
All time.
Oh, all time.
Yeah.
Okay. Billy Bremner, Norman Hunter, Nigel Martin.
Close.
Paul Robinson.
Keep going. Go on, James.
Gary Kelly. Ian Hart.
John Lukic.
John Lukic to the winner, James Wood there. 146 league games in a row. By the way, of course, he had two spells with the club, didn't he? So that's 94 he also racked up as well. So Klich has got some way to go to equal the great John Lukic. But Klich himself, like I said there, four goals this season, three against Middlesbrough. Yes, a coincidence, but a good goal.
Oh, yeah, a really good finish. It was one of the things we'd said a couple of weeks back, is that we were sort of struggling to remember the last time where you saw someone put one away and thought, oh, wow, that's a great finish. And Klichy, you know, pulled one out the back against Middlesbrough. It was a really good finish.
Straight
and,
after Hernandez
hit the post. Post, and Pears had absolutely no chance.
Yeah.
But yeah, Klich's just an absolute machine in the midfield, and he's been so, so good for us. And I thought he got the man of the match, I think, against Middlesbrough, which he deserved. He deserved it against Reading, but Pablo got it because Pablo scored, which is obviously what always happens in a 1-0. But yeah, he's been absolutely brilliant for us this year, and he's one of those players you look at and think he sort of goes under the radar quite a bit, but is easily good enough to play in the Premier League as well.
His production is wild. I was looking at some of his stats this week, and if you look at particularly his attacking stats, his XG, his XA, so his expected assists, his touches in the box, his passes into the box, his progression, just every every one of these stats that you look at from an attacking, progressive, productive point of view, and he's pushing like 90th percentile in the league. So the guy is very, very important to Leeds. And I think, yeah, you say he goes under the radar. I think it's precisely because he's doing all of this. He's doing all of the bits in between the chances. He's helping us transition. He's helping us attack. He's both creative, but also a runner as well. So yeah, really, really enjoyable player.
Yeah, I think also with the chance he missed against Middlesbrough proving that it's not just Patrick Bamford that can miss incredibly high XG chances.
Yeah.
XA, by the way, that is going deep into the stats, isn't it? XA.
Expected assist. Yeah, yeah. Expected assist is just the assist that produces the XG. So you basically take a step back. So it's basically the XG from... Yeah, so say I pass the ball through to Bamford and he missed it on the goal line, as he is likely to do, and it was 0.75.
I mean, it's more likely you'd be passing it to Bamford, to be fair, isn't it?
But it's funny how you weigh that up then, isn't it? Because so you take it from the XG and whoever passed to the striker for that XG. So is it... Is it a good thing or a bad? I guess it can only be positive.
It depends.
For the
it goes both ways.
XA.
Obviously, it goes both ways. So the striker's obviously got to be in a good position as well. But yeah, no. You're basically just taking the expected goals that you're producing from your pass.
But it's hard to narrow down that, right? Because of the rating of the XG. If it's, you know, if it's quite low, that could be down to a poor assist. But that's not recorded in the XA, right? It's just a number.
Yeah, I mean, it's dependent on the player getting a shot away as well. So I don't know. People pull this stat out quite a bit for the season when Pogba got a lot of assists, and they worked out the XA was quite low because there's a few where he'd like pass it to Martial in the central midfield area, and then Martial would like run into the box and score. So yeah, I think in fact I might not be expressing this particularly well, because I think it may be to do with where the ball is originally taken from as well. So if you make a pass to the position, the XG is taken from that position, and then rather than the final XG of the shot. So I think you like all stats, you have to take it with a pinch of salt, because it's in individual cases there's always going to be some outliers where it doesn't particularly work. But I think when you aggregate it all up, when you get a big sample size, you start seeing some of the better players in terms of production start showing through. So for example, Kevin De Bruyne just has a absolutely wild productive stats according to XA, and that makes sense, right? Because he's quite a productive player. So
Okay, well, more on quantum physics and Pythagoras' theorem next week on the Leeds United Fan Show. Let's just quickly look at those wins, James, are crucial, right? Because we look at those narrow wins, like I said, eking those victories out. Keeping clean sheets is one thing. I think 1-0, I think it was Graham Jones I heard 10 days or so ago when Luton got back-to-back 1-0ers. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know what, that's probably the most satisfying week I've had since being a Luton Town manager, because to keep a clean sheet and to win 1-0, he was like, yep, totally happy with that.
Yeah, and I think especially given the fragility of the defence before that run, you're very, very happy seeing us keep three clean sheets on the bounce, because it's something that we've been failing to do and have been costing us points. I think all of those games, to be fair, you'd look at and say, well, it was 1-0 and it could have been, should have been quite a lot more. Bristol in particular, we looked like we could score 4 or 5. Reading, I thought, defended quite well. Borough, but for the ridiculous Bamford shot and combination, would have been 2, and you know, Hernandez obviously hit the post in the build up to the Klitsch goal. So they're satisfying 1-0ers. It would also be a lot easier on my poor heart if we could get a couple more and make it safe right before the end, because obviously you do have things like Reading having a good chance late at the end there, Tavernier yesterday hitting the bar, and it's a good 1-0, but it's not a game where you think, yeah, we're absolutely safe here. Like despite all the metrics, you know, we it could have gone either way there.
Okay, well, will it be 1-0 this weekend? Leeds travelling to Hull, a team in freefall at the moment in the Championship. They are just 4 points outside of those relegation places. We're going to be speaking to Jonty Coleman next.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The Opposition View on Love Sport.
Leeds United fan show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with John McKenzie from All Stats, aren't we? James Wood in the studio with us too. In a very short moment, we're going to be speaking to Jonty Coleman from Hull Live on that game at the KCOM tomorrow. It's the early kickoff in the Championship Saturday afternoon at 12:30. But John, before we do that, you just want to iron out a few issues over XA.
I just want to give a better definition so that our dear listeners are not left confused. I mentioned XG. XG has nothing to do with XA. XA is simply, this is the OPTA definition, expected assists measure the likelihood that a given pass will become a goal assist. It considers several factors, including the type of pass, pass endpoint, and length of pass. So it's another metric like XG, but it is not actually based on XG.
Clear that up for you, James?
Not at all.
Right, now we are going to speak to Jonty Coleman from Hull Live. Hello, Jonty.
Hello, gents. How are we all?
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Great having you on the line with us. XA, interested in that at all?
Yeah, I am a proper stats nerd, I'm not going to lie. You're fast the right person on that one.
Well, I'm glad you understand it, because I'm completely baffled now as to what XA is. No, I'm just kidding. John has explained it perfectly. Let's get into tomorrow afternoon's game. Leeds travelling to Hull in the Championship. It's the early kickoff. Hull City without a win since New Year's Day. Tom Eaves now out until the end of the season two. This is a team that were decimated on January deadline day, of course. Both Jared Bowen leaving the club, Kamil Grzycki leaving the club too. Yes, some players came in, Marcus Madison being one of those, but it's getting a bit concerning, really, is it not, for the Tigers? They are just 4 points outside of those relegation spots now.
Yeah, it's really worrying. And the thing is, after that win at Hillsborough on New Year's Day, Hull City were a point off the top six, eighth in the league. You know, they got some decent results together. And they've caused a lot of shocks this season, but since then, it's been an absolute freefall, really. You know, the fact that they've picked up 2 points from a possible 27, that speaks volumes. You know, it doesn't matter who you lose, who gets injured, but that's enough at any level to think that a side are in trouble. Jared Bowen and Kamil Grzycki leaving on deadline day, that definitely didn't help. And I think a lot of fans were immediately lowered their expectations of the results that have followed have only helped that, really. There's been a lot of injuries, and tomorrow Leeds are going to face a very mixed Hull City side without three of the back four. Obviously, Tommy, as you mentioned, kind of like one of the, you know, main striker options, he's out. There's a few other players, you know, out for like Herbie Kane, who came in on loan from Liverpool only last month. He's expected to be out for the season. There's James Scott, who they'd signed for, I think, the best part of, well, more than £1 million on deadline day. He hasn't even kicked a ball for the club and he's out for the season. So injuries have, you know, struck him again. But at the same time, the players that have been playing recently, it's been really poor. It's, you know, uncharacteristic at times from what we've seen earlier this season.
Hi, Jonty, it's John. I have a question about the explanation given for the sales of Grzycki and Bowen. Was the club, did they give any sort of explanation for why they sold two of their most productive players?
I think on that one, the issue was, I think, that they obviously wanted to keep Bowen and Grzycki. Who wouldn't want to, you know? They really, if you looked across the Championship, you'd struggle to name a better set of wingers from the same club. Bowen's goal-scoring record was, you know, fantastic. Grzycki, you know, he did a lot in games, especially when he wasn't even playing that well. He'd always turn up with something, like the best players often do. I think the issue was that both of their contracts were out at the end of this season. Of course, obviously, they had options to extend those by a year internally, but they'd offered both new deals, neither had signed. They've offered a lot of players new deals this season and no one's extended the contract just yet, which is also another concern. But yeah, I think with Bowen, it was a case of, if he's not going to sign a new deal, then we need to cash in on him almost, I think. And you could argue the same for Grzycki. I mean, really, you know, he's 31, he's the oldest player at the club. He was signed on Premier League wages, him and Marcus Henriksen. You know, they were on you know, quite a lot of money compared to the rest of the squad. And you know, given Hull City's sort of fall in the last couple of years, the way, you know, they've lost the parachute payments now, a lot of money that, you know, they would have been getting a few years ago, they're no longer getting. So they can't afford to pay the likes of Grzycki's wages. Mm. So for him, yes, they got £800,000 for him, but it would be a lot more when you take into account there was add-ons in that, there's his wages, which are so high. And then, of course, Jared Bowen, on deadline day, when you get an offer, you know, around best part of £50 million plus add-ons for your best player, whose contract was going to expire at the end of the summer, who, you know, it's hard to stop him from getting that Premier League. Mm. He's kind of deserved in the last season or two. Mm. So it makes sense, obviously. The issue was obviously the time, I think, you know, losing your best player on the same day. And it was such a free fall that week because the Saturday before they just played Chelsea in the FA Cup at home, sell out crowd, one of the biggest crowds they'd had since they left in the Premier League. So that was a fantastic day. And, you know, they gave a really good account of themselves. 3 days later, they lost at home to Huddersfield. And then 3 days after that, Bowen and Grzycki go. 12 hours later, after the deadline shut, they go and lose 5-1 at home to Brentford. And since then, it's just continued to fall dramatically, really.
Hi, John T, it's James. It just seems like there's been a bit of complacency at Hull, to be honest, saying that, oh, we can afford to sell Bowen, we can afford to sell Grzycki because the rest of the squad will cope without them. And obviously you've brought in the likes of Malik Wilkes, who was very good for Doncaster last year in League One, Marcus Madison, who's been one of the best players in League One since then. Is it just a case of a perfect storm with injuries sort of decimating the first team, or is it more of a case of if you buy League One players, expect League One football?
I think it's a combination of all three of the things you said. You know, I think with Bowen and Grzycki, it was a financial situation where the owners have come out and said, you know, since that it will help to sort of keep the running of the club. They haven't reinvested, but I don't think they'll be really reinvesting much of that money. A lot of it will just be just to limit their debts, you know, if you like. In terms of the injuries, there's been a lot of them. And, you know, I do sympathise with them on that. You know, Grant McCann said that he's never seen an injury crisis quite like it. It just eased last week. And then it's picked right back up again. You know, his press conference earlier said, you know, he's going to have a few more players out injured. And I think they're going to be about 9 first-team players tomorrow. And at least half of them would have probably started. So there's that. And I think, at the same time, obviously, when you're having to make 3-4 changes every game, you can't really get consistency. But at the same time, the players that have played, they're kind of crying out for some new heroes to emerge. And at the minute, they're struggling to do so. You mentioned Malik Wilkes, who came in January. He's sort of he's got some goals in the last few games. And, you know, to be fair, he has turned up recently. They missed him a lot against Barnsley in midweek. Obviously, he's on loan from there, so he was ineligible. And, you know, whether he would have made the difference or not, I don't know, because they were really poor against Barnsley. But with the form he was in, I'm sure the game would have been up for. Marcus Madison, you know, it feels like a chance for him to prove himself. As you mentioned there, his record in League One's absolutely phenomenal. You know, there's a reason why he was linked with so many Championship clubs. But my argument is that he's been in League One for so long now, and he's been playing at such a consistent level for pretty much all of that time. Why has he not, you know, got that move sooner? And I think that's part of the thinking with the move they got in for him. They got him on loan with the option that, knowing that he's out of contract in the summer, they can have a bit more of a look at him. Like a trial run, really. So I think these final 11 games are a big chance. You know, if Madison comes in and plays, you know, really well over that time, City may consider, you know, bringing them in permanently. Because obviously they're going to need wingers. Obviously Wilkes is only in on loan. Madison's only in on loan. So, and they do need them. But at the same time, players do need to step up. And yeah, as you said, a lot of them, their main experience and their main football has come in League One.
You've been playing 4-2-3-1 for the last few weeks. How do you think you're going to line up tomorrow, given the injury crisis?
It's an interesting one. If you'd asked me that about a week ago, I would have said, you know, stick to 4-2-3-1. But they started this season, the first sort of 10-12 games, with a 4-3-3, with one sitting midfielder and two slightly in front as like eights, like a 4 and 2 8s, really. Similar to like how Chelsea used to play under Maurizio Sarri, that kind of style. Because Kevin Stewart came back into the team for the first time in 3 months. He had, you know, been a long-term injury. He came back. I was pretty impressed with him midweek, despite a really poor performance. And because he's back in, maybe they go and stick with a 4-3-3, you know, with a sitting midfielder. I think personnel-wise, injuries have kind of limited the room for speculation. If I had to predict really quickly, it'd probably be George Long in goal, Robbie McKenzie at right back, Matthew Pennington and Sean McLaughlin centre half, Callum Elder at left back. I can see Stewart being the sitting midfielder, maybe Leonardo Silva Lopez and Jackson Irvine just ahead of him. And then a front three, it's a tough one. I'd say Malik Wilkes on one wing. Martin Samuelson came on at half time for Maddison in midweek, and you know he impressed yet to start for City, so he could give him the chance on the other wing. And then McGinnis up front, purely because he's out for the season and Lewis Potter's a late call. Balog's hardly had a kick since arriving as a free agent. So that's what I guess, really. But I think they might stick with that 4-3-3 of a sitter. It might give them a bit more control, a bit more defensive cover, because they're going to need it against Leeds.
Jonty, great having you with us today. Just very quickly before you go, a score prediction.
It's a tough one. It really is, because you know the Championship's throw up those surprises. I'll say 1-0 Leeds, purely because they've got a habit of winning games 1-0 recently. But I think you know it's very much going to be a Leeds 3 points.
Good stuff. Jonty Coleman there from Hull Live. I tell you what, that's the first guest we've ever had as an opposition view who's just voluntarily, of his own accord, given us the entire starting 11.
I know, it's impressive.
Good stuff. You mentioned Martin Samuelson there. I'm surprised he's actually not kicked on. I saw him on loan at Peterborough a few seasons ago. Of course, he's been at West Ham, has finally nicked a move to maybe get some first team football. I thought he'd probably do a bit more than he has done. He's still quite young, only 22 years old.
Yeah, it's tough to move up divisions, I think, and obviously you can play well in Peterborough, and as James is saying, like League One footballers play football like League One players, and there's never the guarantee that league effects won't come into play. So but you never know. A lot of it's to do with development as well as young players. We talk about this a lot too on our channel, that just because a player's playing well at the under-23s doesn't mean to say that his development will always be on an upward trajectory. There's plenty of players who don't develop well, but also you've got to do the right things. You've got to make sure you get your players to that position as well, so hopefully it all works out for him.
All right, gents. Well, it is an away fixture tomorrow. I very quickly want to just touch on a bit of news I read in inews.co.uk. I read today just an article that is out there with regards to Leeds and the fact they've been branded arrogant and exploitative. Now, the tweet that I saw, I have to say, it did surprise me, and I don't want to hammer the media team here. We've already spoken about them with regards to the Kiko Casilla incident earlier on in the show, but the fact that they said Reading are the latest club to not sell out their away allocation, so extra tickets have now been made available to Leeds fans in the West Stand. That's not the right way to put it. Just say we've now got more tickets available. But, fellas, the issue with this and the fact that Leeds have been charging £39 for away fans to come to Elland Road. We know that in the Premier League there's a cap of £30 for away teams. That doesn't exist in the Championship, so it gives teams an opportunity to maybe charge more. I'm pretty sure I think you've both got differing views on this. So, James, we'll hear your point and then John will hear yours.
So I really don't understand the reason people are complaining about this. Like, yeah, you'll pay £39 as an adult to sit in the away end in the West Stand at Elland Road. And if you're sitting in the home end in the West Stand at Elland Road, you'll also pay £39 as an adult. You're not being discriminated against. And I don't see why the club should give you a discount because you're an away fan compared to home fans, nor why we shouldn't sell tickets to home fans because we can, instead of sitting to away fans. I also, like, just from a club's point of view, really cannot stand this criticism coming from Reading of all people. This being a club who very much go on about they only charge away fans £20 but cut their away allocation in half between last season and the season before, where it was 5,000, it's now 2,500 because they've dedicated half of what used to be the away end to their quote-unquote singing section, and haven't moved that round the corner to provide as many tickets for away fans as they otherwise would have done, which meant at the recent away game at Reading, yes, those Leeds fans who were in the away end only paid £20, but there were thousands of Leeds fans in the home end because we couldn't, you know, enjoy the game supporting the club that we actually came there to support. So I don't think there's any easy answers, but when we have a full stadium, we can sell out and we can sell those tickets to home fans at those prices. I don't think you've got any right to complain about being charged what you're being charged.
20's plenty, isn't it? Really? Do you not think?
I agree. Yeah, I do agree. I have to say that I'm probably erring towards Jonathan McKenzie here, but
see, I made my case in about two words there.
And that's pretty much it, right?
Okay, realities of the market.
Okay, job done. Right, next on the Leeds United Fan Show, it's your listener questions.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio. your fan station.
Leeds United fans show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, John McKenzie from All Stats, aren't we? James Wood with us too. We're going to get on to the newly announced Premier League Hall of Fame in a moment or two, but we've just got a few of your listener questions that we're going to rattle through first. And the first one, John, is from Corey James Stout. Wonderful name, that. I'd love to know more about the throw-ins we take and whether or not there's any data or stats on it. It seems like we often make very progressive movements when we have throw-ins.
Corey James Stout is what I imagine you drink in the pub. Yeah, I think we don't have any data on throw-ins. I'm sure there's probably someone out there who does, but we don't have access to them, unfortunately. But I'm glad that someone's mentioned the throw-ins. I think we've had a bit of noise around the channel, the Twitter feed, people talking about throw-ins, because I think people have become very aware of the fact that we're very good at throw-ins. We almost never give up possession from a throw-in. But this question is good as well, because I think that there's a recognition that the throw-in manoeuvres that we do are actually the beginning of playing manoeuvres. So it's not just simply we're trying to get the ball back in play and retain possession. There's an understanding that if you do it well, you can actually create space and you can start your transition phase straight from the throw-in. All goes back to this idea that Bielsa is very big on running routines and getting people playing patterns of play, and I think hopefully people can see why he is so fastidious about it, because I think no one would even consider that we wouldn't just win the ball back from a throw-in when we do that. So Bielsa's all about possession. He's all about if you can retain possession, then you can go on and attack, and throw-ins are part of that.
Okay, next one, James, is from Joe Hill. If we get promoted, can you see Big Kev, that is Jean-Kevin Augustin, no doubt he's referring to there, being a regular starter after he's had a Bielsa pre-season? Surely we'd have to improve our conversion rate, as better teams would punish us for not taking our chances.
Well, the second part I definitely agree with. So,
I don't think anyone would.
Yeah, not a controversial viewpoint. Of course, we need to get better at converting the chances that we actually do get. With regard to Augustin, I'm really not sure. I don't think we've seen enough of him. I know we've got an obligation in place to buy him for about 18 million quid if we go up. So for that sort of money, you'd think we're buying a starting striker. But it does strike me that he's a player who's been sort of at PSG, then he's gone to Leipzig, he's gone to Monaco on loan, now he's here, and he's never really kicked on from being, you know, the guy who outscored Kylian Mbappe at the Youth World Cup. So I would be reluctant to put all my eggs in one basket if we were to go up and saying Augustin, having, because he's not starting at the moment and he's not going to start before the end of the season, to say this guy who's had a very limited number of minutes off the bench is our starting number nine in the Prem. If we were to go up, I'd far rather see us try and bring in someone with a more proven track record, allow Augustin to continue on as that bench prospect, because he is, let's not forget, only 22.
Are you going to be happy with that, do you think?
How do you mean?
Will Augustin be happy with being a bench prospect?
I think it's got to be, you've got to do what's right for the team, don't you? And he's going to be here regardless or not. So whether he's happy, I mean, you obviously want to keep players happy to some extent, but he's not been able to force his way into the team past Patrick Bamford at the moment. I think it's far more important that we get someone in with that proven record and probably try and use Pat Bamford as a make weight in that deal going the other direction. Because he's a player I just look at and think, well, you know, a move now is probably in the interests of both parties.
Yeah, I think that this is the way the Bielsa does things. You have to earn your way into the team. It happens in the squad anyway. If you miss a few games for injury, unless you're Calvin Phillips, you have to pretty much earn your spot back in the team. I think that's a healthy way of doing it. I think it makes people aware of the fact that they are part of a wider collective, and it means that you're giving, I think, a level of healthy competition to your players who aren't in the first 11, and also a level of confidence that you're going to make it onto the team sheet again if you are in the first 11, so you're not quite so worried about making mistakes, although it doesn't seem to really have much impact in the case of Pat Bamford. I think we need to buy someone up front next season. I don't think there's any doubts about that.
So I was talking to Nat about this the other day, and we thought that the best move would be to offer Fulham 15 million and Bamford for Mitrovic, both because Mitrovic is really good and there is no better combination of player and club than Pat Bamford and Fulham. They are made for one another and it needs to happen.
Straight swap. Wonder what Fulham fans would think about that one. Right, gents, we're going to move on to the Premier League Hall of Fame now. Now, this news was announced this week that they're going to be launching a Hall of Fame. First inductees to be announced mid-March. They are inducting two players with exceptional skill and talent. That is what the Premier League have said. And then they'll list a number of nominees that fans can vote on. Of course, Leeds United, a member of the Premier League, a founding member of the Premier League, and with it for the first 12 years of its existence. We're asking all our fans from the fan shows, James and John, who you would induct as a Leeds United player. James, I'll come to you first.
Gary Speed, for obvious reasons. A Premier League great, not just for us, but for Newcastle, for Bolton, for a whole host of clubs. One, I think, of the best creative midfielders of the 1990s and early 2000s. Obviously very dearly departed now. But yeah, an absolute, you know, machine in midfield for us when we won the league and in subsequent seasons. So yeah, Gary would be one of my top nominations for a Leeds player.
I might have to come up. I have to come up with an individual.
What other than just an entity or something? I mean, what?
What you want me to just right now say no, someone who's my nailed in or like who I would like to see?
It's radio. Let's have a discussion. So, tell you what.
I've genuinely not really thought about a Hall of Fame thing because it's all part of this. I mean, people would say Americanization of the sport. Whatever. It's about finding another way of making some kind of revenue, right, I guess.
The fact that a Hall of Fame already does exist for English football, I mean, Justin Fashion, who was the latest entry, wasn't he?
Right,
just
so
last week
the,
or the week before.
That's the National Football Museum.
That's it. You'd think that is enough. Why they have to have a branded Hall of Fame for the Premier League is besides a point.
It's another bit of commercialisation. You've got to remember, football didn't exist before the Premier League.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, so I watch a lot of baseball, and one of the good things about baseball, I think, is their Hall of Fame, because you get this amazing process whereby people are inducted. And you have this whole vote system there's certain people who make these votes for who's going to get in. It's really interesting. You have projections of who's going to end up in the Hall of Fame. Is this a future Hall of Famer? And I actually quite like that because I think it would make people more aware of what constitutes a good footballer. And now I say that with a caveat, as long as that sort of process is put in place. If it's just, you know, Graham Souness picking who he thinks is good, then I'm not entirely convinced that there will be anything other than a sort of big ploy to get more people's money out of them somehow. But I think the idea of doing something like that, where you have journalists and former players and various people from across the football space voting, and you only have a certain number of inductees per year, and there's very strict criteria about who and who doesn't count. I think that would be pretty good for the sport.
Yeah, I agree with you.
You want a name though, don't you?
Well, I'm kind of pressing you for one year. Listen, all, I guess what you do is maybe look at your favourite Leeds player in the Premier League. You don't have to really think about who should be in it statistically or X, Y and Z. Mm. Just someone really that, yeah, you know, and we had Chelsea before you guys, obviously, and I was convinced they'd just say Frank Lampard, Petr Cech and John Terry. They did say Frank Lampard, of course, but Jonathan Kidd said Ruud Gullit, which surprised me because he said it was a real seminal signing, because without Ruud Gullit, the rest of what we know Chelsea to be now probably may not have come.
Yeah, I mean, and this is why the criteria that you employ is quite interesting, because if you do something that is just sort of like based on longevity or whatever, then you will say you're Frank Lampard, you're John Terry's, you're Petr Cech.
The plural.
For example, I would love to have Tony Yeboah in the Premier League Hall of Fame, because I think he is just he was a really fun player. He was seminal at the point where we had him as well, in the sense that we brought this player across from German football. No one knew anything about. He was there for two seasons, but he came, I think, 1 January and left the next.
Yeah.
And he just sort of like took Leeds United by storm. It was incredible. We were in Europe as well at the time, and it was just a really fun period. And he's the reason why. He's not the reason why, but he was like my first Leeds United love. So I'd love to see someone like Tony Yeboah in, but I suspect it will be people like your Mark Viduka's and Alan Smith's, etc.
Yeah, it's difficult to pick out the criteria for them, because there are so many players you can say, well, they deserve it, but do they deserve it on the basis of their time at Leeds, for their particular being good in a position which it's fairly rare to be in, and how do you compare their international achievements? You can say, I think Nigel Martin, one of the most, you know, consistent goalkeepers through the early years of the Premier League. David Batty, one of the best defensive midfielders, should have played a lot more for England. Lucas Radebe, I think the first black South African to captain their national team, but that's not an achievement he's made in the Premier League. So does that count for us? He was obviously very good and led us to one of our best periods of success in our history. So yeah, how do you pick those players out? Is it the fun players like Yeboah who lit up the Premier League for a short period of time? Is it just sustained excellence? Because if it's the latter, then Gary Kelly should be right up there straight away.
Gents, good debate, and I'm glad that we had it. So we are basically going with Gary Speed and Tony Yeboah. Two decent names there. No, I like it. That's the point of this whole process. Right, before we go, a quick score prediction from you both tomorrow against Hull. James?
3-0, Leeds.
Go on the Leeds, John.
1-0. I've literally said 1-0 in the last three, so I'm just going
to
keep going.
Four successive 1-0 wins. And a chance, of course, to put that pressure on West Brom. They play later in the day against Wigan, desperate to get out of that relegation zone. It's the Leeds United Fan Show. We'll be back next Friday, 8 p.m. See you then.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.